Welcome to Vantage Fishing Radio, where we discuss the hot bite and all things fishing, with your hosts, Dustin Clark and Lewis Chapman. Fish on!
Welcome to Vantage Fishing Radio. I am Dustin with my partner in crime, Lewis. What you been up to, Lewis?
Doing some fishing finally. Got a really good early ice season going on. November and early December we're identifying as January, so we got some nice ice and got out a few times and then put a little kink in my back, so I took the last couple weeks off and then hit 11 mile yesterday with you. So it's been about it. The first few trips I went up pretty high though to find fishable ice. Won't say safe ice, but enough to where I felt comfortable on, and we're able to get after some grayling at Joe Wright and hiked into Indian Peaks Wilderness and caught some nice brookies and whatnot. So, and it was good yesterday to go out and get a nice bow. How about yourself?
Oh, not doing too bad here. Like you said, that nice Arctic blast that came in, locked up quite a few things. I think this year, the first time I set foot on a patch of ice that I could actually fish through, was about November 1st. So, I got a few trips under my belt waiting for another Arctic blast to come through and lock everything up and go chase some different species.
Yeah. It's coming. It's supposed to get pretty cold this weekend. And I happened to see the news this morning. Minnesota was like in the negative. So if you want some good ice, I would head up there in the meantime.
Absolutely. Yeah. Outside of, 11 mile waiting on some of these other, lakes that, have pike in them. After my epic adventures, chasing pike most of the summer. In fact, interesting stat here for everybody listening. When boating season opened to the time that boating season closed, I did not put a single trout in my net, on my flow tube, or in my buddy's boat. So, I went without catching a trout, even by accident, or trying for that matter. Everything was geared around walleye, pike, bass, going down to Pueblo, catching, bluegill and things of that nature. So, getting out, over the last couple of weeks and a couple of ice fishing trips, it was the first time that I've caught anything with the word trout in it in close to probably 6 months.
Wow. That's pretty impressive because, you should just stumble and trip over trout everywhere in this state.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I thought. Every time I hooked into something, feeling that fight, it was like, oh, thank God it's not a trout. I didn't get a head shake or anything else like that. It all felt like bass and pike and walleye and all that good stuff. Even getting on walleye during the day, 1 o'clock in the afternoon was a huge feat because normally chase those guys at night and you don't do a whole lot of that during the day.
Gotcha. Well, quite a few trout to stumble around on in 11 mile, huh?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think after the last two weekends, are there any trout even less than 11 mile at this point?
Well, there should be, considering I seen a Facebook post from CPW today about 11 mile being stocked with a bunch of cutthroat, which is kind of crazy. So I was wondering if they meant cut bows by chance, because I didn't know that there was cutthroat in there. And if so, that's news to me.
Yeah, I read the caption on it. I didn't think too much of it because it was just another stocking report and whatnot. So may have to go back and take a look at that or see if we can find the answer while we're chatting up tonight. So,
yeah, I was doing a little research right while we're typing. In the correction, it wasn't Colorado Parks and Wildlife that posted that. It was 11 Mile State Park. Their Facebook page is where I seen that. So I'm going to pull up that post, and then I was pulling up the survey, the fishing survey and, gill survey and all that there at 11 mile to see what it has to say, because it's just interesting. Because, you always get surprised because when you think you know water and then all of a sudden you learn something, it just totally turns it upside down. Like imagine most folks probably didn't know that there is smallmouth bass in 11 mile. I've never caught one. I've seen pictures of them being caught out of there. And then Colorado Parks and Wildlife has confirmed, in fact, that there are smallmouth bass in 11 Mile State Park. I couldn't tell you why they're in there. I don't think they're very prolific because I've fished that lake my whole life and I've never caught one, but just a little random thing, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I've seen the exact same picture that the 11 Mile Marina had put up. I had to do a double take, had to make sure that I wasn't, you know, getting spammed or anything else like that. So, you know, the fact that it's heard of but rarely seen, you got to think that there's got to be some sort of state record in there at this point. I mean, I know the growing season isn't going to be all that long, but, you know, if they're still in there, and I think part of the article that I had read was that the one that this person had caught was big enough to show that it's like the fourth generation, so they're actually breeding and spawning and doing everything that they should be doing, and they're just not a huge, huge population of them. So it's got to make me think that there's some sort of, you know, record in there. So it'll be interesting to see if something like that happens in the near future with more and more people knowing that smallies are, in fact, in 11 Mile.
So I have the post right in front of me. It's 28,000 cutbow trout were stocked last week under the ice. And so, and this was posted on December 8th at 2:44 p.m. So that's quite a few trout to be putting in 11 Mile right at ice season. So that's nice. So we'll definitely, let's get a little bit more into 11 Mile in a later segment, but it's hard not to talk about it because that's like the on and popping thing. But let's talk a little bit about ice augers. What do you think? You've got a new auger yourself, so I figured we'd kind of go over that and then talk about, you know, some of the differences in the augers that are out there and, you know, what our preferences are and what we kind of see going on the ice.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I first, my very first auger was a Jiffy gas auger. It was quite a bit older, tried to maintain it, replaced a couple of parts, you know, all that good stuff. Ended up finding myself suffering from a lot of the case of the ice auger blues on cold mornings at different lakes, reservoirs, and what have you. After I had attended my very first Thailand Outdoors tournament, so that's where it stemmed from, you know, got quite a few good prizes out of there and ended up selling a couple of those and funding myself the very first generation of Ion ice augers. I like to call it the nice green machine. At the time, I think there was one other electric auger out on the market. I can't remember its name. I know there was a lot of controversy on whether Ion was the first or this other brand was the first. And again, if anybody could tell me if they know which one came first, Ion or this other brand, I forget. I think it was called Gator or something of that nature. So anyway, I went out and I purchased this electric ice auger after I did a little bit of research, talked to a few guys. What used to be Gander Mountain, there was a guy that worked in there. His name was Bud, a very knowledgeable gentleman. So as soon as I got my hands on it at Bass Pro, I immediately started cutting holes, and it was phenomenal. Slap a battery in, pull a trigger, and good to go. Now, unfortunately, you know, the very first design of Ion, they had, instead of push buttons, they had flaps or you know, whatnot. And I broke it like on the third trip out up to Dillon. You know, I was dragging it up the little rocky shoreline there. And snapped off the little safety handle that wouldn't let me engage the auger until that was depressed. So, and it was fairly heavy, now that I look back at it, but it was definitely a lot lighter at 25 pounds versus the Jiffy auger that I was carrying around. So it made me very happy. We were talking about this the other day. I think it's been 6 years or maybe seven that I had that particular auger, and it went through a lot. I mean, we did vets on ice, thousands and thousands of holes with this auger, you know, many, many blades, and just had a phenomenal time with it. Well, Ion came out with their second generation, and then they came out with the Ion X, and this year, I think it's brand new for this year, it's the Ion Gen 2 6-amp-hour batteries. They completely did a brushless design on the gearing system and everything, and I thought it was a good time to go ahead and upgrade. Now, for those of us that spend more money on ice fishing gear than I think I do on Christmas presents for my kids, you know, the $800 price tag to me was a little bit steep, but I figured, you know, if I get a good 8 years out of that auger, it's $100 a year, and I know it's just going to be reliable. So I got to put it to the test. My first two trips were, you know, fairly high up, only a couple of inches of ice, maybe 4 or 5 at the most. Got to drill, you know, 25, 30 holes first couple of days. This last weekend, or actually last two weekends, I've been able to go out to 11 Mile where the ice is a little bit thicker. And the biggest thing that I've noticed is the speed. So fortunately enough for me, I know you have an Ion X and I have another buddy who has an Ion. And I was watching over this last weekend, those holes get drilled, and it seemed like the Ion X and even the, we'll call it the first gen Ion, just seemed to be a tad bit slower. So I was very, very impressed. That, and, you know, I think it's about 16 pounds now. So picking up, the actual auger with one hand, the way that they've redone everything, it's still got a ton of torque, but not enough to jerk your shoulder out of its socket. So far, I have been nothing but impressed with it.
Yeah, I got to check it out and see it in action, and it was pretty impressive in how light it was compared to my Ion. And I know my Ion is already lighter than your normal two-cycle power auger. It's just amazing. So it's the price tag that scares me, but other than that, it's a beast. It was kind of cool that it has the plastic auger portion. So, it definitely is a lot lighter because of that. So I think that's where they're saving, and it's more streamlined up in the power unit of the device. And so it just looks cool. It almost looks like a TIE fighter. So it was pretty impressive. If I had the extra fundage to nab one, I'd definitely sell mine and grab one of those too. So is it just an 8-inch bit as far as the new Ions out this year, or do they have 6 and 10s as well with the plastic?
I know for sure they don't have the 6 yet that I know of. The 10 I had seen, I think I steered away from it because I don't like 10-inch holes typically. I got kids, so the smaller hole I can keep, you know, the better off with it. But I'm going to assume that both the 6-inch, if they have it or if they come out with it later this year, and I think the 10-inch – have those plastic fins. And you're right, I do like them. They do have I don't want to say a frailty to them, because I banged it, bringing it up out of an ice hole, and I've already banged it on the ground a couple of times and whatnot, and nothing broke. So they seem durable, obviously not as durable as, you know, the metal or steel or aluminum, whatever the auger blades are made out of for the different brands. But the one thing I noticed when I was looking it over is that there's a little nut at the very top of the very first auger blade, and it's split into half sections, right? So if one does happen to break, and, you know, it irritates me that I've been, you know, just not brand new looking, you could actually pop that off, and it looks like you can get a replacement part for that. You also had mentioned the streamlinedness of the head unit itself. This is where I think I found one of the other big differences. So instead of bringing a drill out with me every year and having to carry that, I bought a little bit that has an attachment to the bottom of the Ion that allows me to screw in my ice anchor huts, or my ice hut anchors, right? And using the original Ion, the head unit was bulky, and, you know, it twisted you all the time, and it seemed you couldn't get the right leverage on it when you first got the auger into the ice. In this unit, I've already used it because of that hellacious wind that was at 11 Mile about 2 weeks ago. With it being a smaller head unit and a lot lighter, I was able to use that adapter, put the ice anchor into it, and immediately just start going. It wasn't awkward. It didn't feel weird or anything else like that. So I still don't have to bring out a drill with a bit and a battery and carry that. We'll just call it 5 to 8 extra pounds when I can just use my head unit. So that was another really impressive piece, the fact that they've made it so compact and so light. In fact, at this point, the head unit is so small that I can't use the sides of my sled to prop it up anymore. It actually has to go into the sled itself and that's caused me some logistical issues, but that's outside the actual features of the Ion.
Yeah. So electric augers in general just give you a huge advantage, and you're hearing a lot of what these advantages are when we're talking about the Ions. I haven't had a chance to see, you know, the new Strike Masters and any of these other electric augers in action out there. I witnessed folks using the K-Drill and things like that last year, and that seemed like a good option for lightening the load too, but also comes with some safety risks and whatnot, but all augers do, some more than others. But things have changed quite a bit when it's come to augers in just what, the last 5-6 years. It's just like a revolution in them. I got started, like you were talking about, with an old two cycle auger. My first auger was left over from the 1980s, an old Tecumseh two cycle, and you know, had the choke and throttle control, and you'd have to replace your fuel line every couple years, and with a carburetor that you have to adjust whether you're at high altitude or down on the front range or whatnot to make it run most efficiently. And they all had chipper blades, and they all weighed 1,000,000 pounds, and you're hauling gas and whatnot onto the lake, and then you're spilling fuel if you have to refuel, and it's on your hands and it's on your line, and just a total mess. And we always noticed that whoever the main man was that, you know, brought the auger out and actually ran it with the exhaust and the fuel always caught less fish almost every single time. And with an electric auger, that's gone. And when we were out on 11 Mile this past weekend, we've seen that guy just a little ways from us out there with his big old power auger, and it looked like a beast, but boy, he was running the Indianapolis 400 just to get one hole drilled. It seemed like it took him like 5 minutes just to get the one. So, those Ion blades are super sharp, and you can send them back in and they get sharpened for you, and they're right back, and they're really not that expensive. And I just do not miss those power auger days. I mean, for those of you that love your power augers and swear by them, more power to you, but I am a convert for sure.
Yeah, you know, and I think everything's got its time and place. I know, you know, we've got now gas and electric and propane, and when they can actually start making augers that are powered off of my thought process, and that I can just teleport to a lake and start fishing, is when I'll upgrade again. But you know, I guess, you know, gas is not without, you know, its advantages, right? I've got to carry a battery or a spare battery to probably cut through as many holes as a gas auger would be able to, when you can just constantly refill up. And, you know, that's extra weight to me. But for those folks out there, there's Jiffy, there's Strike Master, there's Ion. The one I was talking about earlier is actually called Ice Gator. They claim to be the first electric 40-volt auger out on the market. And then, like you said, you have stuff like the K-Drill and, I don't even know all those names. The K-Drill and
the clam makes that plate. You can turn any drill into an auger.
Absolutely. So, you know, I looked at it. I looked at the pros and cons, and I understand, you know, maybe the K-Drill might be a little bit lighter. You know, do they come in an 8-inch bit or they just come in a 6-inch bit? But you still have to have a drill and an adapter or whatever, you know, the technology is. And sure, you know, somebody with a K-Drill, they might be carrying around 10 pounds. That's the auger, the batteries that they got to have for that. And I look at it as like, if you go with a K-Drill, they're what, about $350. And then, you know, a good brushless drill, you know, might cost you another $120 if you don't have it, or if you don't want to use one of the ones that you use around your house or jobs that you do, and you want to go get one that's specifically dedicated to it. You know, that's another $150 possibly, depending on which brand you go with. And then if you have a spare battery, you know, so all those things add up, and I look at it and said, okay, well, I have an entire unit that is ready to go, good to go. And maybe I overpaid for it. Maybe it was $200 more expensive than what I should pay for it, but I like it. And that's the point. You got to like the auger because, you know, most of us towed them around for quite a long time.
Well, you know, and I think each one really fits a different purpose too, for the most part. Like, you know, I've got the model from 2 years ago, and I got a 10-inch bit on it, and I prefer a 10-inch bit when I'm chasing lakers and pike, and I try to do that often and whatnot, just so I have that whole size for the bigger fish and stuff. So I actually have extra weight, so I have to be conscious about what weight I'm dragging around on the ice and things like that, where, you know, a guy with a K-Drill is much more mobile. And if that's your thing, is covering tons and tons of ice, or maybe hiking into the backcountry after some ice, definitely a better, much lighter option. So, I mean, it's about, you know, your fishing style and what you prefer. And even like the older gas augers or a propane auger, they all have their pros and cons. So it's just, you know, research them and look at forums. People will complain or they will promote their augers and what they like. It's really easy to learn a lot about augers and just find the one that's going to fit your needs ice fishing. And even having those older ones, like the gasoline, the two cycle and mixing oil and all that, it stinks. But you know what? If you're on a budget and you don't want to be augering 8-inch holes by hand, I would gladly take an old Tecumseh auger over a hand auger. So, I mean, it's just all about where you're at with, you know, what your budget is and you know, how far you're humping it out onto the ice is pretty much the two factors I would consider.
Yeah. And you know, like I said, 17 pounds or 16 pounds, whatever it happens to be, down from, the 25 the Ion originally was, to me that, you know, yeah, that's 4 pounds, but that means that's 4 extra pounds I'm not lugging around at the end of the day. And, you know, at this point, I would think that, my Ion now, if I took it apart and I had a buddy, that could carry the head unit and I could carry the auger bit or vice versa, you could actually light enough that you could pack it in. Like if you wanted to make the trek up to St. Mary's, you know, understanding that that's a few extra pounds for you. The head unit and the auger itself, it could be done. You know, I mean, if you're doing it with a cage reel, might as well, you know, that's kind of what I'm looking at there. And, you know, the durability, I got so much use out of my old one. And if this one lasts, half as long or even longer, I'll be happy.
Yeah. You know, and that's one thing that's nice about the Ions. And I don't know if the other electric augers are as versatile as the Ion that are out there. I might have to ask around and look that up a little bit. But, you know, with the Ion, you can attach the quick attach device underneath the head unit and you can easily throw on an extension to give yourself a little bit, you know, get yourself through deeper ice. You can cut through 3 feet of ice, or you can put on different size auger bits. I mean, with the older models, they make both the 6, 8, and 10-inch bits. So you can swap out bits for what you need, and take the ones you feel you'll need that day. And so there's a lot of versatility there. And also you can, through that, quick release device, there's another little device you can put in there that can sync your anchors for your, huts and stuff like that. So, ice anchors, no reason to bring another drill. So it can all do the same. So I really do like that. And I think the biggest downfall I have found so far to electric augers is the battery and the battery maintenance. And I mean, it's one of those things you put in the charger and you plug it and it'll get back up to green level and you're good to go. And depending on the ice thickness, at the very least, you're usually going to get 30 or 40 holes out of a battery on an Ion, if not more, depending on ice thickness and density and whatnot. But, if you don't keep the battery warm and take care of it, it will fail you. And, so it's always a good idea to have an extra case or something to keep that battery out of the cold and maybe put a couple packs of hot hands in with it or something like that, or keep it in a coat pocket with you or something just to keep it on the warmer side. It doesn't have to be like warm. It just can't be like freezing cold. So you don't leave the battery on the ice or attached to the auger. I personally remove batteries off of my Ion every single time I get done with it and I put it back in. So there's that little bit of thing. I guess that's the offset of having to pull the cord and mess with the choke and get the throttle going and prime a power auger is we got to attach and deattach this battery and store it in the proper location to keep it viable for use.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, on a warm day, it's probably not that big of an issue. On colder days, it's definitely more of an issue. I'm kind of looking at some of the Ion accessories right now. And what I don't see is I don't see like a current way you can order the 8-inch, flex, auger, the one that's made out of plastic, or we'll just call it the plastic auger. I see all the 6, 8, and 10-inch, the pictures all kind of look the same, but my suspicion here is that most of these pieces are adaptable and I don't see why I wouldn't be able to throw a 6-inch, even if it's a little bit heavier, a 6-inch bit on it.
Well, you know, and I would like an 8-inch for my auger. So I'm hoping Ion in, you know, the next year or two, once they get some production out of this new model, that I can use that quick adapter to throw on your auger, onto my head unit. And that way I have an 8-inch too that's super light, and that will lighten my auger as well for those times I don't want to be hauling a 10-inch diameter auger. So one thing I was going to ask, with my 10-inch on the Ion, I've actually got chipper blades. Do you have chipper blades on yours, on the new one, or what are the new blades like?
No, my blades, for the 8-inch are the exact same blades that I had before. So, no fuss, no muff. They're, you know, I can use all the old pieces. So they're not chippered, they're shavers. In fact, interesting thing here is I found, a Cabela's brand for all those people who own Ions out there. You know, Ion blades are about $40. I found at Cabela's the exact same blades that fit the Ion for about $25.
Wow.
So
nice.
I, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, well, those are the exact same blades. I even brought my Ion blades in, opened up the Cabela's package and compared them, compared the holes and the threads and everything. I said, hey, these are the exact same. Why am I paying $40 anymore?
There you go. You know, that's one thing is Cabela's and Bass Pro don't sell the Ion anymore. So
you are correct. I had to go through Shields.
Mm-hmm. So just a heads up, if you're looking for an Ion, I think they are all about the Strike Master and some other brands and whatnot, but, which, you know, we'll definitely have to maybe, find somebody that's using one of those Strike Masters. And, you know, Randy Ford, I think's got one. So next time I go fishing with him, I'll definitely check it out. And so that way we can give another electric auger its fair due on here as well. And it's not just us, loving Ion, which is hard to do because we do love Ions, but, just so we can see what it is with, what's going on with other electrics. But, you know, we were just talking about chipper blades and then the regular blades. And so the difference is the chipper blades are a little bit more ruggedized. They're not as sharp and they're not going to be as efficient in cutting through ice. But if you got a little bit of gravel or some little sand or just ice that's inconsistent, a lot of bubbles and stuff, those chipper blades are going to handle that a little bit better without damaging the blade. It'll take you just a little bit longer to punch through, not too much, but a little bit, where the just normal straight flat blades, they're like razors, and like on clean ice that doesn't have any gravel or whatnot in it, I mean, they just will blaze through, I mean, like holes within seconds. Even like in feet of ice, you're talking like no more than 10, 15 seconds to get through. But if you allow the blades to dull out, because you're drilling on, like Georgetown or something like that mid season where the interstate's blowing sand onto the ice and freezing in there, that you'll ruin your blades. So you got to kind of watch the ice conditions you're drilling into, and be cognizant of what blades you have. And the other thing that, especially with the Ions, and it even goes for power augers and stuff, when you've got good sharp blades, you shouldn't have to put a whole lot of downward pressure on the auger. It should grab, cut, and with the weight of the head unit should efficiently cut down. You can add a little bit of pressure just to increase the speed, but if you're like really dogging on that auger to make it cut, you need new blades. I mean, it really shouldn't, even with a power auger, you know, through a foot of ice, it should take no more than like 20 seconds or so, I would think.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you got anything you want to add about augers, Dustin?
No, except for those folks that are looking for that, that Gen 2, I'm just looking at a couple of, items on Ion's site, which, by the way, we should, I'll mention that, Ion is, a partner company with Eskimo. So if you like Eskimo, you know, there's a good thing, you can continue to support them by getting the Ion, but, at the same time, I didn't realize this until a couple of years ago. Artisan is actually the parent company who makes a lot of the same products that most of us use already. So I found it very interesting that, people talk, oh, I love Eskimo, but I'm not a huge fan of this. And it's like, well, it's made by the same company. So, you know, it just tends to be a little bit weird, but, they don't currently have a 10-inch auger blade or a 6-inch auger blade for the Gen 2. You can buy the replacement parts, and it is brand new for 2019. So I wouldn't expect all those little accessories or, you know, a 10-inch or a 6-inch blade to be out there, just as a FYI to anybody wanting to know.
I bet in the next year or two they'll be out. And that's what they did with the Gen 1. So in the Ion X, you can definitely buy different – you can go right to their websites and you can buy different auger bits without having to buy another head unit for sure. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and then we will be back to talk a little bit more about 11 Mile, what's going on with the bite there. All right. Welcome back to Vantage Fishing Radio. We're in our second segment. We're going to definitely talk about this early ice season a little bit more, and specifically our fishing at 11 Mile. And a group of my friends have been hitting it over the last few weeks. And then Dustin and I were able to make it out with a few other veterans and some other friends yesterday. And we had a nice little group and we had a decent day of fishing. And I don't mind talking about 11 Mile a little bit. I'm not going to give away exact positions or give you GPS coordinates or anything like that. You know, I've spent some time on the lake trying to figure it out and whatnot, and I'm still learning a lot about that lake. But we'll definitely give you some tips and we can talk about the lake a little bit and get you well on your way. And if you're old school 11 Mile and, you want to put your 2 cents in, feel free to shoot us emails and we'll definitely read your emails or read any questions. Just shoot us an email at vantagefishing@gmail.com and we'll get back to you and answer some questions on future podcasts and whatnot. But 11 Mile this is the time of year to fish it through the ice. I firmly believe that 11 Mile is definitely a springtime lake and a fall and early winter lake. Like in the dog days of summer, it can get pretty tough there. Late spring, it gets tough. And then the closer you get to Christmas, in my opinion, unless you know the lake really well and know the fish really well, it can be an almost impossible bite. I mean, 11 Mile is one of those reservoirs that can absolutely humble you. You want to comment on that a little bit, Dustin?
Oh yeah, it's definitely humbled me more times than I care to admit at this point. In fact, it almost humbled over 500 people, a year and a half or maybe 2 years ago, or maybe it was last year. It almost humbled 500 people during the Ice Addiction Tournament when, like the last 15 minutes or within the last hour, three people caught a fish. So, definitely could be extremely humbling if you think you want to give it a go for the first time.
You know, that was an awesome tournament and not because it was a great tournament. That was actually one of the worst ice addiction events I've been to. And I still had fun at that. So when I say I thought it was the worst, I did not have a bad time. I had a great time. I love being out there with other anglers. I like the tournament series and all that, but boy, the conditions on that, it was like summertime out there. It was such a nice day and that tournament started and we just went hour after hour and no fish were being caught or turned in. And it was in that last hour I was starting to think, and I think I was commenting to you, you know, I'm going to start rooting for a skunk. Cause like what happens in this tournament if not one fish is caught? Like I want to see what Nate and Tightline Outdoors is going to do. And I had a feeling they're just going to say no winner. Good luck next time, guys. And then transfer all those prizes and the money and whatnot over to the next tournament. And a lot of those prizes that did go on one did go over to, I think, the Grand Lake tournament, if I remember right. And, yep. But that was nuts. And so I was rooting for a 500 person skunk on 11 Mile and it nearly did it. And it was actually the last 5 minutes that there was two fish caught. So I think there was a first and a second place. There was a trout and like a little hammer handle northern pike caught. And I think the pike won it, if I remember right.
No, so, I think the trout.
Was it the trout that won it?
I think the trout outbeat the hammer handle there. And that just goes to show you. You know, it doesn't matter the size of the fish or if you're just specifically targeting a pike, a trout in this state can still win.
Yep. But that's 11 Mile. And then, you know, other days you go to 11 Mile and it's like you're a pro fisherman and you're hauling in 20 inch trout one after another and 30 inch pike. And it's like, wow. And then you go out the next day or the next week and it's a whole nother experience. And that's the tale of 11 Mile. It's like the tale of two lakes. And more often than not, it's the harder lake to fish, not the easier lake to fish. And when it comes to ice fishing, as soon as the ice is where I'm comfortable enough to go out on it, which is generally 4 inches or so, in my opinion, that's the best time to be on 11 Mile. And then from that point on, the closer you get to Christmas, that bite gets more difficult. And so right where we're at now is kind of on the tail end of the prime, and you can go there and expect, you know, maybe a good day and get a handful of nice big fish, or maybe one or two big fish. But you get after Christmas, you're going to be working just for one big fish. And so something to keep on in mind if you want to get out to 11 mile, I've always thought it was an easier lake to fish early season. And to be honest with you, since we went out last week, and if it wasn't for my back slowing me down a little bit, I meant to be out 2 weeks ago. And Jason Reed, who's a friend of the show and been on here a few times, he went out there, had a 20 fish day, and there was nothing under 18 inches. And he had a monster pike that rolled over and broke him off at the hole. So he was there during the prime, and the few days after that, from what I was seeing, was really good. And now this weekend, it wasn't bad, but everybody had to work for those fish that they caught. It was one of those things to where, you know, you're only going to get maybe 5 or 6 bites in a day, and you have to capitalize on every single one of those bites. And that's exactly what happened to me yesterday. With the back, I was trying to be cognizant of it, and I wasn't wanting to sit there and hunker over a hole and jig and have that bad posture. So I was like, I'm going to just use the jaw jackers, set it up with some jigs I really like, with some of the baits that I've really trusted at 11 mile. And, you know, I was going to go around and talk with some of my buddies and catch up, because I hadn't seen a lot of you guys in a while. And that was my plan. And my jaw jackers got hit 6 times, and I was only able to land one of those fish. And it's just because I wasn't on my game. I wasn't paying attention as well as I should have been. I had my jaw jacker settings set from when I was up at Joe Wright Reservoir in super windy conditions, for fish that weren't picky and would just slam it. And so I had the little wing nuts tightened down on the jaw jacker, and that was causing, those fish to be able to lip that and steal some of the food and just barely set it off without getting the hook set. And so, you know, I had to identify that and recognize it and correct it. And, you know, unfortunately I was able to do it for the end of the day, and I fought off my skunk, but I should have definitely had more fish in. And it just shows you at 11 mile, and those opportunities you get, you got to capitalize on, because they don't come that often. And as close as we get to Christmas, they're going to be fewer and fewer.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think, it was a little bit different to tail of the tape for me. We showed up, got my hole set up and everything, and I think within the first, 10 minutes, I had a nice, nice rainbow on and got it landed, and I think you ended up posting one of the pictures up on our Facebook page. I ended the day with 2. I left early so I could get home and, you know, get ready for work the following day, but, you know, the week prior to that, or actually the day prior to that, I was out Saturday on 11 mile, with my dad and my son. And in a spot that, you know, last year produced, you know, several 6-pound trout. I got a master angler out of it. And, you know, it was, I think it was about a week later than it was now when there was finally good ice in this area. And, you know, I was like, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and try over there. I did not see a single fish on my Vexlar. I put my camera down, didn't see anything. I was talking to some other folks that were on the ice. They were seeing the fish, but they were being extremely picky. And at this point, I was just 4 hours of not seeing a single fish come through. I wasn't on the right spot. I just wasn't doing it. But I also did avoid the small 11-mile village out at Cross Creek. You know, there when I showed up, I think I seen – I was 8 o'clock in the morning or 8:15 in the morning. I think I seen 100-plus people out on the ice. Tons of huts. The parking lot was packed. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to go fish somewhere else. And, you know, and the people over at Cross Creek might have had a glorious day where they caught 20 fish. But me personally, I did not want to deal with all of the loud augers and everything else. And, ultimately ended up biting me in the butt, and I got a big skunk for the first, after 4 trips or 5 trips this year, I had 1 skunk. So a little bit disheartening, but 11 mile, I take with a grain of salt every time I touch that water.
Yeah, you've got to go there expecting that the skunk could happen and realize that you're also at a place where you could catch a trophy fish just as easily too. So, and it's one of those give and takes. I firmly believe that there could possibly be state record type fish in there when it comes to the trout and northerns. I have seen some massive pike in there over the years. I remember fishing in, I don't know, it's been a long time, 7 or 8 years fishing, down on the southern end of the lake and being in a big five-man hut and having holes drilled at the corners and stuff like that. And one guy looks down and sees the head of the pike, and another guy looks down and sees the tail of the pike at the same time. So, I mean, it's just monster fish are in there, and there's some monster trout in there too. So, I mean, it's got its rewards, and sometimes, you know, part of the game is learning those lakes and learning those fish, and you're going to get skunked sometimes. So it's about putting in your time and putting in your dues. And eventually, if you're paying attention to what you're doing and you're on top of things, you'll land something nice for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. One of our other buddies that showed up on Sunday, he brought one of his friends, never been ice fishing before. So it was his first time on 11 mile, first time ever out ice fishing. Could have been the first time fishing in general. Don't really know the guy. Hope to get to know him. He seemed like a pretty good fellow. He got the big skunk. And the only thing I can say is, you know, it's 11 mile. Put your dues in and everything else like that. I think every time he had the ability to share a Vexlar or any other kind of electronics, I was kind of peeking over, wasn't seeing anything on the sonar. I mean, at least I was spotting fish and marking fish and whatnot and had my opportunities. I think I missed... I missed four and landed two, but it's just from either nervousness or whatever kind of stomach bug I had that morning. I had to keep telling the guy, you know, this is 11 mile. You don't come out here and expect to get an award winning fish or a trophy fish every time your jig hits into the water. Like I said, just got to pay your dues. So hopefully, it didn't discourage him, and those folks that want to get other people and family members into ice fishing, I would wholeheartedly avoid 11 mile. I don't even care, you know, saying it, go to Monument, catch some stalker fish, and let somebody get used to being out on the ice. Let somebody get used to hearing it, drilling holes, getting used to the cold, because there's nothing worse than a first time ice fisherman wanting to get to know something, being in cold, miserable conditions and not catching fish. It's not a good time for anybody.
It could turn frustrating really fast, and it can be a first and last time somebody goes. And, you know, I've run into countless people who were like, I tried that once, never again. It was just so cold, or my feet were frozen the whole time. And, you know, whoever took them out, if somebody took them out, set them up for failure. And that's just too bad, because it's a good sport. And if done properly, you can be comfortable and even the most extreme conditions out on lakes like 11 mile, but there's a big knowledge base and, you know, a lot of experience and the do's and don'ts and stuff. And that you got to learn those to be successful. So you're right. There's definitely a lot of lakes that are much better, like the Georgetowns and the Evergreens and the Monuments and the Red Feathers and stuff, where if you want to get out and learn ice fishing or take your family ice fishing, if you don't have that experience level, and the good gear yet, those might be more successful trips and funner trips, which will help you really get into the sport for sure.
Yeah, you know, and on the flip side of that, right, you know, you go out to those lakes where you've got a better chance than decent, right, to catch stocker trout and everything. I personally don't like bringing brand new people out to fish the Snake River Inlet at Dillon during the kokanee spot, because then you get this false sense of security that, yeah, I could stick my hand in the water and just snag a fish out of it. And we all know it doesn't go like that. It happens to be, you know, a very unique situation up there. But bringing out somebody, especially, you know, kids or people who really want to, you know, get into it, and setting them up, oh, yeah, I caught 40 fish today, but then I tried another lake and I didn't catch anything, it could be real disheartening. So, you know, pick and choose. If you can get on the ice in the metro area, I know there's a lot to be had over, you know, Cherry Creek, Chatfield, Bear Creek Lake, all those kind of things that can make for a good time. You're going to catch the stalker fish and whatnot. And then, you know, eventually help that person graduate up to reading 11 Mile, Granby, all these bigger lakes that you got to spend a lot of time figuring out and getting fish on the ice.
Well, you know, just stay tuned to Vantage Fishing, listen to our shows, watch for, you know, the blogs and, you know, Facebook posts that we put out. And we do pass on a lot of knowledge. And so that can help you in the game. And we're always available to answer questions. So you can send us a message on Facebook or shoot us an email or whatnot. And or if you see us in person out on the lake, say hi and we'll gladly talk to you and pass on knowledge. It's what it's all about. I'd rather have somebody fishing, and having a great time with it and really becoming a steward to the sport than to, go on and not enjoy it and then leave it and badmouth fishing and all that. So, but when it comes to, Cross Creek, you mentioned that earlier, boy, it is like a city. You know, when we were out there Sunday, there was so many people. It sounded like there was more people there Saturday. But just looking around and then just looking all the way down the shoreline on that, southwest shoreline, as far as you can see from Cross Creek down, you know, past Lazy Boy and Rocking Chair and all that, it was just shelter after shelter. And it's just crazy. And I think part of it is there's not a whole lot of ice fishing opportunities. Like Antero, I think you can get on right now. And there's a few other places, but you know, a lot of people's normal lakes still aren't, capped yet. And so they're all in 11 mile and that lake is getting beat up. And I was impressed that those trout were still having even the bite that they had with the amount of augers going off, the amount of lines going down. I mean, they're just in Cross Creek alone, it wouldn't surprise me if there was probably 300 to 400 lines in the water, you know, in that larger area. And Cross Creek is a large area, so it holds it well. But, I mean, it was just crazy to see how many anglers were down there. And it's nice to see that the sport's popular and growing. But boy, you're right. Sometimes when you want to go fishing, you don't feel like being in the city when you go fishing.
Absolutely. That's why we bypassed it on Saturday, because there was more people than there was Sunday. And it was just insane to me that, holy, you know, many people out on the ice.
And everybody piles in on there. And so obviously they don't mind being there, and whatnot. And everybody got along from what I gathered, and there was different groups talking to each other. But for the most part, everybody kept plenty of space between groups and stuff like that. And I don't think there was any hard feelings or anything like that. And, so kudos to all the anglers that are out there. I mean, they were catching fish and there was a ton of them and there was no issues. And that's always awesome to see, because, you know, there's a lot of times you get a whole lot of us anglers in one little area, and we all have our ways about things and we all have our pet peeves, and it doesn't take much to really tick somebody off. And I didn't see that at all.
Yeah. You know, it was a completely different experience from the weekend before. I paid no attention to any of the weather reports. I heard it might be a little windy. So I ventured out there, with a couple of buddies, and you know, 40 to 50 mile, or I think it was at least 40 mile an hour sustained winds. I think it was gusting upwards of 50. I know they closed 285 because of like gale force winds. It was ridiculous. And there was one other hut out there on Cross Creek with me. But was the most unique part was that I was out there, I was scudding around and everything. And after two or three hits, and maybe even on the fourth hit, I was cracking through the ice. So I was very uncertain with what the ice conditions were. We were in fact standing on 4 inches of ice. So we set up the hut during a break in the wind, piled four guys into this hut, and we're fishing. And you know, we could see them under the ice. They were coming in fairly regularly. I would say, you know, every 15, 20 minutes, you get a group of them troll through. And, again, rustiness, I missed more than I care to admit. But I landed a really nice, I think it was a cupbo, and it just had a great time. Now coming off was a different story, trying to pack up that shelter, and whatnot. And the reason we had to leave and, you know, be careful out there on the ice, well, we piled four big dudes, four grown men into my big hut. And after about 2 hours, we heard a crack, boom, all the way through it. A huge crack came right through the hut. And we all kind of, you know, like, hey, I'm going to start squeezing out diamonds here pretty soon. We kind of waited for a couple minutes and said, okay, well, nothing's really bad happening. You know, there's no issues. And then all of a sudden, water started seeping in through one of the holes. So we could tell that the ice had actually dropped a little bit from underneath us with the weight and the wind coming in. So be careful, you know, even though it may look good, spud around, do what you need to do. If you don't feel comfortable, you know, go home or find somewhere else to fish or whatnot. So definitely two different experiences within a 2 week period on 11 mile over 3 days worth of fishing. And I've seen the bite turn off just as quickly as other people have seen it turn off.
Yeah. And you know, some morning, sometimes it's a morning bite at 11 miles. Sometimes it's an afternoon or early evening bite there. I mean, so it's, you know, if you can stick it through the day at 11 mile, I mean, sometimes the bite will change for you. If it's slow, it could go faster. And like, I had the plan of going up there. It's like, hey, let's get to 11 mile. We'll see how the bite was. And if it's decent and we're seeing fish, we'll stay and hang out and fish through it. And that's exactly what happened. But our backup plan was if it was slow and we weren't marking anything, didn't have much action, was to pick up and move over to Antero and see how that was. Well, I'd walked up, to the parking lot mid morning, to help a buddy out onto the ice. And I got talking to a couple other anglers in a truck that had just pulled up, and they're asking me how it was. And, you know, I gave them a good report, and they told me they just come from Antero and it was dead. And like, nobody was catching anything, no bites, no nothing. And usually it's the opposite. Usually 11 miles, the tough one, and Antero is the easy one. So, we definitely made the right call by staying and sticking it out with 11 mile that weekend. So I'm looking at our Facebook page. And we have a post that we put out today, which is December 9th. So and I'll probably get this podcast out either tomorrow, which will be Tuesday or Wednesday afterwards. But you can go on there, post up your photos. We want to see everybody's catches from the weekend. And one of the photos I posted of Dustin and then myself, the one with Dustin, you can actually see a little bit of that renewed Gen 2 unit with the Ion Auger, as well as part of the auger blade. But if you scroll through the photos that everybody's been posting over today, and I'm sure we'll post more tomorrow, I'd say 80% of them I can tell are from 11 mile. And so that's where everybody's at. I bet a good portion of Colorado's hardcore ice fishermen that just have to be out on the ice are out there on 11 mile. So, yeah, good on you guys for getting out there and battling and catching those fish. A lot of nice fish they're posting. It just shows you what's in 11 mile. Have you had a chance to look through those yet, Dustin?
You know, I have. There's definitely some very good comments from people like Front Range Bass Bullies, some good people we know posting up and showing those photos. In fact, I'm looking at them now, and just by the ice clarity, you can tell that it's 11 mile. There's a nice pig from Chris Clay's, a couple other fellows on here. Good looking, fish by this young man. It looks like it's a nice, cut bow. It's ridiculously huge. And, it looks like Dad even caught a big one, but it was just a tad bit smaller. So yeah, post up those photos. There is quite a few nice fish coming out of 11 mile right now. But if it's too tough of a bite, you know, move on. Move to the next place.
Yeah. Before we wrap it up, let's just talk about a little bit of what we're using and some of the conditions we're looking at 11 mile. We'll just do this in a quick couple minutes, and then we'll wrap up the show since we're probably getting close to, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour. We're just kind of getting back on our radio feed and starting to do some shows after a long break. So we're a little rusty and don't have our timers up and all our usual stuff. So we'll get it a little bit more streamlined as we continue in and do future episodes. But, you know, 11 mile is a very unique lake, and it's a lake that it's like, I don't know. It's hard to describe. It's like combining a deep water lake like Dillon with, like a Antero or a Spinney, more like a Spinney because of the pike. And you got the rocks, and you got the deep water, and you got the kokanee, and you got some big browns. But like as Spinney, you got shallow waters with weeds and weed lines that lead off to deeper waters where you got pike and big rainbows. And so it's a very unique lake, and I really like it. And so there's multiple different ways to fish it. And I've always kind of stuck to multiple different points on that southwest shoreline. I don't fish the north shoreline a whole lot. I've not had a lot of success on that side. Even in the boat, it's been very limited. And so it just depends on kind of what I'm fishing for and what time of year it is on, you know, on the ice is how I'm targeting them. But like this time of year, you're looking for flats next to weed beds, maybe anywhere from 6 to 12 feet of water. And sometimes it's good to be next to deeper water, so fish that are traveling back and forth will come from that deeper water. But, you know, like that, the Cross Creek area, that's all shallow and weed bed areas and stuff like that. So, it's good to find some just kind of barren or weed lines next to big weed beds and kind of set up on those and fish it. And you know, it's one of those things, be prepared to move around if you're not marking fish. But if you're marking fish, it's a matter of just trying to see what they're going to hit and enticing that bite. And like yesterday, I know we were all changing lures multiple different times. And you know, Dustin, I don't think there was one fish that was caught on the same lure twice. I think every single fish that was caught out of our group yesterday was on something totally different.
I could believe that. I tried multiple different pieces. I ended up getting to the point where, I switched over to a Castmaster to get a little bit of flash. And that's when I noticed that I was actually getting the attention. However, I just thought maybe there wasn't enough movement in my particular Castmaster that I was using. So I switched over to a jig that I don't particularly use. It's kind of like the Pistol Pete, but it's also got the body. So it's got like a propeller, like a Pistol Pete, but it has the body of a regular, you know, like oval shaped jig of some sort. I acquired this through, actually buying, somebody who was getting out of the ice fishing game. They had a bunch of them. I just went ahead and purchased everything because there were some pieces in the setup that I wanted. So first time using it and that's where the second money fish came in. And I realized, okay, it wanted something flashy, but in addition to that, it also wanted something that, had a bit of movement with the propeller. And I know you were seeing even different results using some bio bait, that they would come up and take a look at it, but not necessarily strike the way that they wanted to strike. So you're right. Every single one of us, and I think, I would say about 90% of the group, maybe 80% of the group ended up catching fish, but I think they were all on different jigs, lures, or what have you, bait that was being used on Sunday.
Well, and I talked with Tommy Hicks with the Patriot Anglers and Alpine Fishing Adventures on Saturday, and he was up there Saturday fishing Cross Creek while you were in another location. And he told me it was all about the dead stick and tube jigs. And we get out there and we try dead sticks and stuff like that. And I'm getting some hits and I'm missing them on my dead sticks, but nobody else's dead sticks are getting nailed. And I think it was just the very specific bait, which I was using. I was using the Mike shrimp eggs on a small, tiny pink jig. But beyond that, it seemed like all the fish were wanting something moving. So it's day to day of what they're going to like. So you gotta be prepared to, you know, I like having personally, I've got 6 to 7 rods at any given time. They're all tied up before I get there. And so I'm just rotating things out. And once I get through all those things, I'm not finding success. I'm retying other things, you know, and I know that those fish at 11 mile come through every, you know, 15 to 20 minutes. And so every time fish come through on my electronics and they come and they're checking it out and I can't entice that bite or, they don't want the dead stick or whatnot, then that's time to change or figure out something else until you can figure out that bite. And I think that's the biggest key to 11 miles. Just keep working at it and not just sit on it and just be like, oh, well, it's not my day, but you know, be willing to tie knots. And if that means you got to throw up a shelter because you know, there's a lot of fish coming through, but it's too cold and you need to tie knots, throw up that shelter so you can tie knots. I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we were probably just getting them dialed in, as I stepped off the ice and I'm not sure, you know, if we would have been any more successful had we stayed in a large group like we were in, to kind of figure out when fish were coming in, moving out and all that good stuff. So like my partner says, you know, tie knots, get different jigs, find what works for you, find what works for the fish, and figure out the best method is really the only thing to say about that and have a good time doing it.
Yeah, you know, in lakes like 11 Mile with clear water, it could even be your line. It could be your brand of line. Maybe it's got some reflection with all the sunlight that gets through the ice there at that vertical presentation. I mean, it, 11 Mile, it's easier for fish to see line than most other lakes. I mean, just hands down. It's just that clear water. And in some areas, like as you get closer to the dam and some of those far south coves, you can see the bottom in 20 feet of water from a boat. Without polarized glasses. So that water is super, super clear. And so, I mean, steel leaders are a tough thing to use for pike there. You know, you start using thicker monos and stuff like that. That could lower your bite rate. I mean, and then some days it's just on fire and they're going to put down whatever you throw down, depending on, doesn't matter line or anything else. And it's just how fishing goes. But on those tough bite days, every little detail matters. And so you got to keep in mind, you know, is the line I'm using reflecting light? You know, is this, is the hole that I drilled with the sun coming down, it spotlighting on, is that scaring the fish? I mean, there's so many factors into it that I think a lot of people don't ever really consider. And it's just all taking it in and really being conscious of your environment and paying attention to detail and being able to problem solve and work through it and try different things. And that's what'll bring you success in some of these huge hogs that I'm seeing people post up on our Facebook page of these fish out of 11 Mile and other places.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think it's about that time. I know we've got quite a few ice fishing adventures to come up. We're definitely going to be, I know myself, I'm going to be fishing quite a bit of tournaments this year. Plan on getting out and, icing or attempting to ice some pike and things of that nature. Any big plans for you this year?
Yeah, I'm going to do some fishing with the Patriot Anglers. We have Vets on Ice coming up, so I'm looking forward to that. You know, I want to get out of Antero. I definitely want to chase some Lakers this winter, a few different lakes, so I'll definitely be doing that. And I'll definitely get up to the Delaney's and North Park and things like that. So I'll be moving around and fishing different places. So it was good to get out on 11 Mile, and it was good to get out in those high alpine lakes to get the season started. But I'm ready to get some of these other lakes capped.
Yep. Here's hoping that we get some good cold weather come in, cap those lakes, you know, be safe out on the ice. Always carry your spud bar, safety gear. Now, if you have flotation devices, things of that nature. Keep them with you. And obviously don't exert yourself too much with having to carry too much gear, but, taking a little bit different of approach this year myself when it comes to, tournaments as well as just fishing in general. I'd like to beat my last year's record and actually have more of a multi-species ice season this year instead of getting a bunch of trout and whatnot. So if you ever see us out on the ice or you know where we're going to be, feel free to shoot us an email, come talk to us. Anybody that wants to see the performance of the G2, feel free to stop by if you know where I'm at, and I'll let you fire it up and drill a couple of holes, see how you like it. Those folks that have the jiffies or the cave drills, I would love to see what the performance is standing side by side. To be honest with you, I'd love to see if my Ion G2 will actually cut through the ice faster than yours. So let us know. Any final thoughts, Lewis?
No. I can talk fishing all night and all day, and we can have the longest radio show ever, and I can just pour all this knowledge out, but we'll break it into sections, and we'll be back in a week or two. We're trying to record these shows either Sunday or Monday nights after a good weekend of fishing, and then report back to you guys on what's going on out there and what we're experiencing, and just talk fishing in general and as well as some other things, you know. But just excited to be back on. Feels good to talk fishing.
Absolutely. Always good to talk fishing. Love to see fishing pictures. Don't forget to post those up on Vantage Fishing on Facebook, vantagefishing@gmail.com. And as always, fight the skunk.